This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Today, we commemorate Shakyamuni Buddha's awakening. And of course, we do that whenever we practice. We always take our seat, as the awakened ones do. This is very different from other approaches to practice, which present one with a different myth. The myth of the, gradual ascent. But our myth is not even instant ascent. Ascent is already accomplished. This is why Dogen would say something extraordinary like, Zazen's not meditation. It's already the Anraku Homon, the Dharma gate of joy and ease. Now, it's possible that maybe especially in a retreat, we don't have that feeling about every period of Zazen. Isn't this joyful ease? Of course, that's the, well, it's not the problem exactly. That's the phenomena of sentient being and Buddha in the same breath. May think I know what bliss is, or joy, or something. But this is always putting, some picture, some already arrived at knowledge ahead of our actual experience. This is just, one aspect of the huge array of false views or wrong views. Sometimes you just say fixed views. Views that won't yield to the actual flow of our life and experience. That looks good.
You told me that.
So one of the stories in the Book of Serenity that we encountered in our long journey through that marvelous text is the one where Buddha says, I see all beings are completely endowed with the wisdom and virtues of the enlightened ones. But they can't see it. How wonderful, he says, how strange. And because they can't see it, they wander around in a kind of dream of quiet desperation. So after some hesitation, you know, Buddha set himself the task of pointing out to people how things actually are. The usual way in our society, of course, is Chinese say, heaven and earth and beings come up with the world. But the profound teaching is that there is no world apart from mind. No phenomena at all outside of mind. And as we were saying, this mind this everyday mind is the mind pointed to by the Buddhas and ancestors over and over again. So that story in the Book of Serenity is quoting the nearly incomprehensible Amitāṃsaka Sutra. Not quite, but nearly. That sutra is illuminating the teachings of there is no world apart from mind, nor any mind apart from world. In that sutra, Buddha is quoted as saying, how amazing all sentient beings are awake at heart and cannot see. So he says, you know, it's all about attachments and wrong views. That's really all there is to it. Once sentient beings abandon their attachments and false views, they see clearly. And of course, the supreme false view is what in Sanskrit is called satkaya drishti, or literally true body seeing. Actually believing that a person is ontologically supreme and separate. Not coincidentally, that wrong view is the toughest one to, I don't know, root out or something. Ideally, it might be enough for Buddha to come along and say, actually, that view, that's actually not right, so you can give that up. And then people would go, oh, yeah, okay, great. And maybe some people do actually have that response. The traditional view, of course, is, well, they've been practicing for eons. And then in some particular rebirth, they hear that teaching, and right away it's like, oh, right, that's how it is. The image in this story, in the Book of Serenity, is it's like somebody has a dream, and someone who is healthy and wealthy and good looking, but they have a dream where they're sick and poor and miserable. And they believe that. And the sages say, the form changes, the body differs. So in other words, there's some dream, and there's a dream body. And seeing that dream body, the person has feelings. Oh, I'm miserable and poor. And then the sages say, and then wisdom is blocked. Wisdom is the know before or after that sound. Of course, there's a poem that goes with the story. Something like, heaven covers, earth supports. Making a clump, a mass. And pervading the whole universe, unbounded. And breaking up subatomic particles with nothing inside. Getting to the end of the mysterious subtlety. Who distinguishes turning towards or away? All the Buddhas and ancestors come to pay their debt for what they said. Ask old Master Wang of Nanchuan. He says, each person gets one bite of salad. Just one. Sorry. As we found in studying this text, you know, all these poems, they're part of the fun of writing them is when the author gets to show off his or her knowledge. So that poem refers to another Zen story featuring old Master Wang of Nanchuan. Nanchuan is the place where he taught. And they were out collecting bracken. I don't even know what bracken is exactly.
It's a fern.
It's a what?
It's a fern.
It's a fern. Okay, so they're out collecting ferns for the lunch salad. And they're picking away, and Nanchuan has, I don't know if it's his student or Dharma brother named Shashan, and so Nanchuan takes a branch of bracken and says, this is a really good offering. And Shashan looks at it and snorts and says, he wouldn't be tempted by a banquet of 100 delicacies, let alone that thing. Nanchuan says, still, each person should get one bite. clear. Who's the he that Shashan refers to?
I think that would be Buddha.
I think that would be Buddha. Yeah. A Buddha really not tempted by much of anything, let alone a fern. Still, Nanchuan says, each person should have a taste. Well, a taste of what? Well, how about pervading the whole universe unbounded? Breaking down subatomic particles. Nothing inside. Our views make it hard for us to see that that is our life. Now, I can't really, you know, you can't really give someone else a bite of salad, right? They have to get their own. But powers us in our practice, of course, is not so much our intention as the vow of the Buddhas and ancestors. And because of this vow, you have to do something or say something. And once you do, there's a mess. And once you do, you've got a mess like we have. We can't just go out and munch on some bracken. We have to, you know, get dressed up and make offerings. And as a result, knowing this, the Buddhas and ancestors come and apologize and say, we're really sorry to have started this, but we thought it might help you. It might help you enjoy your bite of salad. Then, interestingly, Nanchuan then says, and if you try for another bite, you go to hell like an arrow shot. So, just one. So the Buddhas and ancestors, feeling very embarrassed, have been feeding us salad for several days now. And, you know, maybe we didn't notice, but that doesn't mean we can't. But once you notice, you say, no more, thank you. That's enough. And then go on to contemplate this sorry world as somehow pervading the whole universe. No boundaries. And let the magic happen. And when you trip over one of our wrong views, notice it and go back to picking bracken. Actually, it's okay if you get more than one bite of salad. It's all right. But remember to let it go. Otherwise, it'll sit in your stomach. Brick. So we have a little ceremony where we thank Buddha for all his effort and by extension innumerable ancestors, female, male, maybe in between. can't grasp it, our lives have been touched by that teaching. Somebody asked Jiaozhou, you know, there's that expression in the poem, mysterious subtlety. And so somebody asked Jiaozhou, what is the mystery within the mystery? Jiaozhou gave him a peculiar look and said, how long have you been mystified? And the guy said, oh, I've been into this mystery a long time. Jiaozhou shook his head sadly and turned away and said, boy, anybody but me would have been mystified to death. It's not really that mysterious. It's just that you can't get outside the mystery to admire it unless you, you know, invent stuff like this. Line in that story, the commentator Wansong, he says, there are seven people here. And this morning at Zazen, 6 a.m. Zazen, I looked around and, by golly, there were seven people. Appreciated that synchronicity.